Cricket isn't hard work, sweat, and putting the effort in at training. It's sitting in your car and waiting for someone else to put the nets up so you can bat for 6 minutes and go home immediately afterwards.
Cricket isn't clean kits and fresh socks. It's making 43 in under 13s and having no idea that you'll wait 10 more years to make more runs in one innings.
Cricket isn't being hoisted off the field after a glorious 100 in your final game. It's gazing into the dressing room mirror after hard-fought 13 off 49 balls in a fourth-grade semi, a match you will go on to lose by an innings, and seeing a face you don't even recognise, a face weathered beyond your years, eyes that once lively and sparkling are now dead, soulless, blank. Cricket has sucked you of your essence and robbed you of your youth. You will go on to play another 13 seasons. There is no punchline here.
The Great Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a great cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the Great Cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible, at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast on Fox Sports. My name is Ian Higgins. It's our last show of the summer. Boys, the summer is almost over. It's a big show. Whenever it isn't, that doesn't make any sense.
It's okay.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Dave Hussey's on the show. Bryce McGain is on the show. A double act.
What a smooth introduction, Higgins. I've really enjoyed watching and observing that developing over time.
It's an evolution. Boys, what are we going to talk about today? Obviously, the Big Bash is finished. Yep. Australia's still playing one-day international cricket, even though we lost, even though it was on a Monday. I don't know why they play cricket on a Monday in New Zealand. That's confusing to me. Andre Russell, he's been banned for drugs.
Yep.
We'll speak on that. Hashtag RTGC, my favourite time of the week.
Shields back, man.
They're using different balls.
We've got some farewell messages as well towards the end of the show.
Yep.
Some real, some fake. Work it out for yourself.
It's going to be a real wild show, I feel. This is the last time we've really got here in the Fox Sports studios, the grim, dark studio that it is. Mm. Thank you for having us for all these weeks,
Rupert.
Yeah. But we're just going to, you know, we're going to go balls out, as they say crudely.
Yeah. Yep, go balls deep. Yep.
I said balls out, but you've just so penetrated.
I heard what I wanted to hear.
Well, let's kick off with the most important stuff, the international cricket.
I thought you were going to say the internet.
Yeah. I watched it on the internet.
Yep.
But Australia are now one down in the ODI series against New Zealand. They played at Eden Park there with a notoriously bad record in rugby. It was a thriller out of nowhere. So New Zealand hit 286. Australia nearly got there.
Yep.
Did either of you guys watch it on Monday at work in jobs?
I didn't watch it live, no. But I did catch the highlights on Fox Sports.
Oh, well done.
What's that
We're open to ads.
and it really was notable for two things. One, just Australia collapsing, and then two, Stoinis nearly saving us with something remarkable and transcendent.
So
let's discuss Stoinis and how he's the new rig of Australia.
Well, I love him. That's the first thing I'll say. Total love. He's now the number six. He should get everything that he wants. I watched it.
Get everything he
anything
wants.
Anything. Keys to the country.
Yep.
I think
Stoinis is rig and hair.
Yeah. It's
yeah.
Questions. What is he not?
I don't care if he plays cricket or not. He's just rig and hair.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it dates back to Keith Miller. I mean, he was the original rig and hair, and he also served in World War II, which is the most alpha thing you can do. Have a great rig and serve for your country.
So really,
how did Andrew McDonald get to play for Australia?
That's right.
In the era of all-rounders with rigs and hair.
He wasn't Flint off 05.
He was like a regular red-headed man who batted seven and bowled first change.
Yeah.
In this era of Flint off 05 rig-based selections, how did he get in at seven?
Well, exactly. I wonder whether the hard policy of rig-based selections that's been happening since 2005, which has been a complete failure, has actually all been worth it, given what Stoinis is offering with his rig, with his hair, and with his runs.
I mean, Andrew McDonald was replaced by Andrew Symons in the side.
Yes.
So, I mean, that again, rig-based selection.
Abbott-like muscular Christianity.
Mercurial talent. But, I mean, what it comes down to is rig-based selections. I mean, so if we can get back onto the one-day international cricket match that we lost, it's sort of sorry.
Were we off it?
I mean, most people wanted us to talk about Stoinis for an hour, and we obviously will.
We'll
have to trim this down to a slim 50 minutes. But I mean, sort of, when you take away Australia's three best batsmen, Khawaja, Warner, Smith, I mean, it's probably not surprising that we struggled and collapsed.
It surprises me a little bit.
Well, they're the big three, aren't they?
The big three.
Warner, Smith, and Khawaja, you know, Smith's Telstra.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Who's Optus and who's VHA?
Yeah, that's right. Well, who's Warner's Virgin? Probably Optus.
Well, Warner's the challenger, isn't he? Yeah,
the challenger brand.
He's making big power plays. Yeah, going for sports, streaming online.
And Kwaja has had a dip, so he's VHA. Yeah, losing subscribers by the minute.
Yeah, exactly.
Bad network outages.
Overseas heritage. Yeah, VHA. I had an opportunity to watch the game in full. I was doing some work on it. Mm. And Stoinis' innings was one of the best innings I've seen from an Australian batsman. What it reminded me of was that I could not think of the last time an Australian player batted his country into a position of victory from defeat.
Michael Bevan?
It's a long time ago. Mm. I know it feels like yesterday, but it was a wonderful innings.
So what about this? So you know how like anyone who does well in any level of cricket, you have to caveat it with, but the bowling wasn't great.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't bowl that well to him. It was a flat wicket, all that kind of stuff. So what about, so if I caveat Stoinis' innings by saying there was a 60-metre boundary straight?
Yeah. Well, you've got to. I mean, that's the point.
Well, these are the things that, you know, are almost unspeakable.
So,
aren't
so
they?
What I'm
Wouldn't
saying
it ruin, it
doesn't
ruin
count.
The narrative.
Doesn't count.
Second innings Bradman run. Batted against slow bowlers. Yeah. You know, same thing.
A second innings run, don't count.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. I have to say, a friend of mine, won't say who, is a Bradman. Housemate of Stoinis's, and he told me that the night prior to the innings, or to the match, Stoinis had texted him saying, I'll be man of the match tomorrow. I'm going to take 3 for. I'll take a catch, and I'm going to hit 68 not out.
So he lied.
So he was wrong, and he lied.
So he lied. After the match, Stoinis' comments were interesting. He said, I think he was asked, you know, how's it feel? And he was just like, well, you know, scoring 3 for 100 is good, but then you look at the stats after the game, it's not too good, not too much fun losing. I mean, why do you guys think he was lying?
Yeah, exactly. I guess they must get media managed to say things like that, but really I'd prefer them to tell the truth, which was the best result he could possibly ask
how
for.
How soon after his 100, like how soon after the game had ended, did he make those comments? Because it was immediately after, he would be basking in pure adrenaline and elation.
Yeah,
he wouldn't even be able to talk.
No, this is the press conference afterwards.
Oh, so he had time to compose himself and go to the media managed.
I mean, do we need to explain what we're going on about here? Is that obviously the pinnacle of sport, the pinnacle of cricket is to score 100 in a losing side. That's the best thing you can possibly do.
You've done everything you can do and everyone else has failed. And by contrast, you are the victor and they are the losers.
So it maximises your opportunity to be smug, which is really what we're all looking for.
Right, that's what I was going to ask. So if you were in Stoinis's position, would you guys have walked in there, thrown your bat, being like pretending to be really angry, disappointed, you know, head in your hands? Would you guys have done that?
Oh, it's a once-in-a-lifetime innings. I'd be living it up as much as I could. Everything, hit the fan, snap the fan off, hit people with it.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why.
It's probably the only time when you can like demolish a dressing room and get away with it because you scored runs.
Yeah,
everything's okay. So they scored runs,
Even though it's an away dressing room. Smash it.
Yeah, you can just smash it.
Yeah. New Zealand would be singing their team song. Everyone just sort of have their head down. Stoinis would just be going, oh, me, this is terrible. You know what I mean?
Shit song, isn't it? Shit song.
Although, I mean, the part that I don't feel is being discussed enough is clearly there's problems between Hazelwood and Stoinis. I mean, Hazelwood must hate Stoinis.
Massive,
Hence,
that's enough.
He's denying him the opportunity to win the game for his country.
Mm.
Right?
I mean,
he just basically ran himself out.
Yeah, he just ran halfway down the wicket.
Yeah,
and then
I've got to get out.
Yeah,
I'm getting humiliated, emasculated massively. I scored a run or faced a ball, and it's a 50-run pass.
So for our overseas listeners who may not be aware of Stoinis becoming the next Australian Prime Minister, Josh Hazelwood was in a partnership of 54 runs with Stoinis, and he didn't actually face a ball.
Yeah.
So what's going through Josh Hazelwood's head there? Was he just bored?
Well, I think big data has crept into cricket, and I think he's starting to think, I can only imagine the kind of statistical anomalies that people are talking about on Twitter. I've got to end this.
Yeah.
If Stoinis wins the game, becomes the most memorable partnership in Australian history, he's contributed 0 off 0. I can't have it.
Yeah.
Can't be having it.
Or on the other hand, though, if he ever does try to enter the post-career speaking circuit, it's a great anecdote, and he could probably charge $10,000 for that anecdote.
That's a good point.
Yeah. To the circuit, Robin Hogg style.
Telling the same stories every time. Yeah. So, guys, let's talk about stats here. That partnership, 54 runs, was the second highest partnership where one partner hadn't faced a ball. The number one was the Sri Lankan opening partnership of Kalawathanara and Jayasuriya. Mm-hmm. And they scored 74. And one of those two bats, I'm not sure who it was, didn't face the ball. Now, I don't know if you guys remember that in the 90s. Like, that were a dynamic opening partnership. How did that happen? How did one of those batsmen score 74 runs on his own without the other one even scoring? I can understand tail ender protecting from the strike. Mm. You know, I can understand, but I don't know what the answer to the question is. I'm just talking stats. It's
just one just hated the other.
One hated the other.
Hate breeds so much behaviour in cricket. And we've been talking about hate this whole show. There's a bit of hate out there for Sam Hazlitt's selection, and I'm reliably informed that the pronunciation is Hazlitt.
Hazlitt, okay.
Not Heaslet. Hazlitt.
Really?
Yes.
Hazlitt.
That was my house at school, in primary school. Okay. Yeah. Hazlitt.
Hazlitt, yeah, yeah. Okay.
You remember that.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was picked
last time I ever felt happy.
He was picked off the back of some good performances in the national performance squad.
Yeah, he smashed
CA11.
Oh, he smashed him in the nets.
And smashing it in the nets.
Smash them in the nets.
There was a number of Matador Cup players, which is the sort of domestic competition in Australia, who were overlooked for Hazlitt, who made four.
So
none of
the top 18 run scorers in the Matador Cup this year have been picked for Australia in a one-day format. Mm. But why would they? They're barely top 25, you know?
Well, is he a rig? I haven't seen his rig. Is he live?
Haven't seen his rig either, no, Sam.
I don't think necessarily a rig-based selection. I think he's got a good rig. Which
does he know someone?
But you wouldn't
need
base
a baseline
the selection
rig.
Upon the rig.
Does he know someone? Does he... has he paid his fees up?
Yeah, he might have paid his subs or...
paid his subs.
Yeah, Cameron White maybe had it.
Yeah. Does his dad know the president?
His dad knows somewhere, yeah. I think his dad has shares in racehorsing and so...
Actually, it's funny you say that, but he... did play, I read this somewhere, I could be getting this wrong, apologies in advance, but I think he played at the same club that Trevor Holmes managed.
Oh, so there you go. Okay.
There's
a connection.
There's a bit of a connection there. Yep.
So you know how the Australian Open final has just finished, I'm talking about the men's final,
now.
And it was if I can take you back.
Yeah.
And there was a really nice moment between, you know, Federer and Nadal in the final.
Yeah,
They were both giving each other praise. I mean, that seemed really bizarre to me. I don't understand quite why two males were interacting with each other who were competing against each other they were being nice. I mean, can you guys shed some light on that situation?
No, not at all. It was the most confounded I've been since Trump assumed the presidency, really. Like, Roger Federer, firstly, I love him deeply, but when he said that if he could draw in tennis, he'd love to do it with Nadal, I never heard a bigger lie in my life.
Yeah.
He's a cold-killing machine, Roger Federer.
Yeah.
Forget the smile and the perfect hair.
Yeah.
He hates losing.
I mean, anyway, like a draw is like kissing your sister, isn't it?
Well, that's right.
I kissed my sister yesterday, not like a draw.
Yeah. What was it like?
See, playing cricket in England is quite funny because you have like winning and losing draws. Yeah. And that's, I'm not sure the analogy there, but you know, I'm just saying it's a thing.
Okay. Well, back to the one day, to cricket, the sport we talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Matt Wade's been sent home, so he was going to
captain. Gone home, yeah.
He's going to captain Australia. He won't do that now.
Sam, is this Trump-based immigration policy? Is that what he's been based on?
That's what I wanted to kind of raise because it's not been very clear about why he's been sent home.
Right, okay.
So was there any kind of press release sent out or any messaging, like, you know, like Sean Spicer from the Washington, from the White House? Was there any kind of mouthpiece announcing this?
Are there any alternative facts?
Yeah, I think they basically just said he's being sent home for reasons undisclosed. So
sent home is aggressive.
Mm. My mind just goes everywhere when I see that.
Yeah,
or hear that, and it's going to some strange places.
Yeah, kissing his sister.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Immediately.
Yeah. Always back to kissing
and then maybe
his sister.
History, but sister first.
That's not true about the press release either.
Or having a sister.
Yeah, that big one. But were you no good without Smith and Warner and Khawaja, is that it?
Man, the cricket's weird. Like, just cricket being on the Monday, and we just played Pakistan.
Yeah.
And we smashed them. But then we went away from home, and then we're not good anymore. So it comes back to not being very good.
That's true.
We're just killing time before India, aren't we?
We're killing time.
Better ways to kill time.
I suppose we can link this in with the Shield season because we're trying to find ways to win away from home. And so what we're doing is now we're playing the second half of the Shield season, which has just resumed after the BBL, and we're playing with Duke's balls.
Yeah.
So we're gonna beat England in England.
Right.
By using Duke's balls in Australia.
Can I just ask linguistically, having not played a season in England? Is it Duke's balls or Duke ball?
Well,
you know, I hear a lot of people say it's the Duke ball.
It's the Duke, yeah. Well, Duke singular. Yeah. But then Duke's is, you know. Like,
what's on the ball? I need to know officially.
So it's Duke singular. It's not like we're playing with the Kookaburras.
Right, yeah.
Which is just the brand is Kookaburra.
Yeah.
So it says D-U-K-E.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. I'll just get into that stuff.
Yeah.
I need to know. But you know, in cricket, like, you've got to get your lingo right.
But there's also
if you're one word off, you're cast away
one letter off.
You're
leave the club.
You're an outlier from the community. You're often exiled.
See, in lower league cricket in England, they use the reader's ball.
Right.
Which isn't the reader ball, it's reader's ball.
Right, okay, but if I rocked up to that club and I rock up, I don't turn up, I rock up.
You rock up, yeah. you're not just there, you rock up.
I've got to rock up.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway. I can't think of otherwise, I've got to lob.
I lobbed up.
I lobbed.
When did he lob in?
Yeah. He lobbed.
Yeah. 3 a.m.
Yeah, how many? Three bells?
What? Yeah. What time did you clock in?
If I said read a ball, that'd be like, go to the other side of the country.
Yes. Now,
pack your bags.
Yeah.
Pack him.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. Okay, let's talk about another competition that's packed them.
Yep. It's packed it in.
Terrible segues. BBL.
Yeah, that's finished.
Scorchers one.
That's finished now.
Oh, right. It's over?
Not in the WBBL, the Sydney Sixers won.
Yeah, okay.
Which was, I'm still circuiting from it.
Well, that bothers me because last year the Thunder won the men and the women and they got a really good photo together. I'm big on that kind of stuff. Mm. Although that was cool. But obviously they couldn't do that this time around because the Sydney Sixers men didn't do their due.
It's funny, it was the same two teams in both finals, in the men's and the women's. Same teams played against each other.
On the men's side of things, I thought it was interesting because I think I read that Langer, who's the coach of the Scorchers, he focuses on homegrown talent, whereas you've got the Melbourne Stars, for example, who like to import talent. So do you think, like, Langer's thinking there, is he moneyballing this? Like, has he done the stats, or is this just fierce protectionist policy?
No, I think it's the opposite. I think he's going
fierce with protectionist policy, fierce, a la Trump.
A la Trump, yeah. With the gut, the George Bush gut.
Western Australia is so far away, it might as well be another country. I mean, it's basically part of South Africa.
I think it wanted to be another country for a while there, too. Try to kind of annex itself.
Rightfully so. Build
it's closer
wall.
To Jakarta than Canberra.
So, I mean, are you guys saying that we should build a wall? Is that what you're saying?
I think so.
It's been saying that all day.
Yeah. But the Scorchers are three titles out of six competitions now. Is that a dynasty?
Huge if true.
God, I hate that word so much.
Is it a dynasty?
Yeah, I think if you've won half the available competitions, that's pretty good.
Yeah, but it's only been six.
But it's also the Furnace at the Wacker.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So they played the Furnace. Please, contrived marketing.
Branding, yeah.
Get it. It's hot. Yeah. Starts with F. Yeah, fiery Furnace.
We get it, it's hot.
But one good thing to come out of it was that... our boy Maxi Klinger, Michael Klinger, was picked for the Australian side finally at age, what is he, 37?
Yep.
What a feel-good story that
is. Well, it is a feel-good story. It makes you wonder what he'd done to somebody. He's done something to somebody through his career, right?
In the same way that Hazlitt got picked, Klinger's also done or not done something.
Or not done something.
Yeah. I mean, that's just facts. Those are the facts on any selection.
Mm. What'd you do? Pretty simple question. Maybe no one just asked him.
Are you guys excited by him playing?
Yeah, I am, actually. I've been a Michael Klinger fan for a long
time.
Do you think
you're excited because he's actually like one of the best players in Australia, therefore you think he's qualified to succeed in the international stage?
Yeah, I just like that he likes batting.
Do you really feel anything, though? I mean, like...
Oh, I haven't felt anything for years.
But it's like it's his international debut, but it's a T20. Like, it's a T20.
T20i.
Yeah, it's a T20 I, small I.
But also, one of the best things about when you pick someone who's 17 and, you know, finishing school is that you think, oh, but this guy could play 453 test matches.
Yeah.
Whereas Klinger can't. He can only play, you know, 20.
Yep.
So.
Do you think, I'm just thinking about T20 I's now, go back to linguistics. Mm-hmm. Do you think they don't call it IT20s because it would have looked like an Apple product?
Yeah, IT.
Oh, like the I. Yeah. Yeah, probably, exactly. Yeah.
Let's put that on the podcast.
Anything small I followed by a capital letter is copyrighted.
Yeah. Okay.
Steve Jobs had his fingers in so many pies that it wouldn't surprise me if he was, you know, in the game in T20 as well. guys, what do you think about Cameron White's comments? He was saying that the Australian cricket team is being used as kind of like a development squad.
Yeah.
And Trevor Hons has come back today and said, well, Cameron White, he wasn't even that good.
isn't that just the immediate visceral response from anyone challenged?
That's how it works in Australia, but what have you ever done?
His career hasn't been earth-shattering.
Yeah.
I think he said, I think that Cameron White is correct, and he's got nothing to lose saying those things because their attitude to picking the youngsters
Are more people saying stuff now? Do you get that feeling that more people are speaking their mind?
Just more platforms. Like, just Trevor Hones would have been impressed on it. But also, I thought that Trevor Hones actually made a fairly decent point.
Is it Hones?
Trevor.
Sorry.
TH.
I got problems with this stuff.
And linguistics again.
Yeah, I got problems.
I'm being ostracized.
Sorry. No, you're fine.
And he said that, you know, Cameron White forgets that he was once picked as a young player as well. So, like, that makes a fair point.
I just think that Cameron White was probably the guy who deserved to be picked because of his form and his
runs. I agree with that. But he was also picked at a young age because he was a player of promise.
Yeah.
Weren't we all?
Weren't we all?
This summer, We've got the biggest renovation challenge yet. Two teams will have to transform not one, but two broken down grade cricket dressing rooms every single week. There will be tension.
What even is grade cricket, Dazza? Why did we take time off work to do this?
Come on, Charlesy. Work hard, love.
There will be drama.
I just want to make this perfect. Grade cricket deserves a great home.
But when the reveal comes, there will be joy.
Oh, God. Lads, boys, look at this, eh? Results! Results!
Ever since the missus booted me out and took the kids, I've been sleeping in this dressing room. It's a second home to me, literally. So this is really special.
For us to be able to come in and give these grade cricketers a beautiful new dressing room, one they can drink their beers in, sing the club song, judge each other in the showers. Yeah, you know, it makes you feel good.
But this ain't no charity. Not when the stakes are this high.
I'm not here for a bloody holiday. If I wanted that, I would have gone to Bali or Thailand.
It's Australia's toughest renovation competition. Winner takes all.
If I have to dish out a little bit of chin music, I will.
Presented by Australia's favourite knockabout blue-collared larrikin millionaire.
We're giving great cricket the reno makeover it deserves.
Reno Rampage, coming soon.
So, guys, we've got a great guest on today. He's just announced his retirement. He's a stalwart of Australian cricket. Mm. Let me just run through some raw data for
you. Some stats. Yes, good.
69 ODIs, 39 international T20s, a first-class average of 52.50, two decimal points.
Always.
Including 45 centuries, he's a Victorian Bushrangers stalwart. I'm speaking about Dave Hussey. Welcome to the Great Cricketer podcast, Dave.
Thank you very much for having me.
Mate, thank you for being here. And firstly, congratulations on a magnificent cricketing career. We did notice that you made the announcement via Twitter after the Stars semi-final loss to the Scorchers in the BBL. When you started your professional career all those years ago, did you think that one day you would be tweeting your retirement?
No, back when I started, there was no Twitter or Facebook for that matter, so no, definitely not. But yeah, I wouldn't change anything. It's been an amazing journey.
And there's been so much praise heaped upon you. I mean, you've been a part of the cricketing landscape for, you know, well over a decade now. How's it been since you retired? Any second thoughts? You know, you're going to come back next year, or you know, go around and grade cricket next season? What's the plan?
Well, as soon as I got back from Melbourne after a long flight from Perth, I went away with my family, my wife and two kids, and pretty much got lumped with the two kids for the whole couple of days while we were away. And I've started revisiting. Maybe I should play for another couple of years just so I can stay away from the kids. So.
Yeah, those feelings will only grow stronger, Dave. I suppose it's on that note. We ask the question that we ask every week, which is, you know, what is your relationship to grade cricket in and of itself?
Well, I play club cricket for Paran. One of the lucky ones that probably just had one club pretty much the whole, or in my Melbourne life anyway, for that matter. And yeah, unbelievable bunch of boys, and they definitely keep you grounded, and they definitely steal all your cricket gear too. So great bunch of lads.
I've just won. It's a very good Paran side as well, Dave. I mean, that was that's one that's got Bryce McGain and Chris Rogers as well. I'm just wondering, you know, who's the best grade player that you sort of played with, awkward phrasing as usual, that didn't go on to a professional career?
Well, probably been a couple at Paran. Probably Neil Schlittler is probably my favourite.
Friend of the show.
He gets pulled all parts. He's very, very rampant on Twitter as well. So yeah, he's probably the one that probably could have gone a lot further than what he actually did. But yeah, I think his off-field life, being a policeman, probably down the road.
Dave, do you think next year? I mean, if selected, do you think you'll captain either threes or fours?
I reckon I'd be lucky to get in either of those teams, or both of those teams. My bowling's junk, my fielding is not great, as you saw in the Big Bash, and I don't know. I won't be picking up a bat until at least late September time, so I'd be lucky to get a game at all.
Well, I mean, obviously the plan there is to try and get yourself qualified for finals and then just roll into a third-grade premiership like any sound human being would
just
do.
Just play as a bat.
Just play as a bat, yeah. I'm sure they'll have you.
Yeah.
Well, my goal is to actually not tell my wife I'm going to play club cricket until I get down to, like, end of September, rocking down for the first game, just take my whites under my arm, say, see you later, I'll see you at the end of the day.
Great cricket's all about hiding things from your significant other, isn't it? look, David, we can just kind of jump back even a bit further. I mean, growing up, obviously, your brother Michael, you would have been playing a lot with him as a junior. How did you find your way to Paran, like, you know, through the junior grades, you know, as a kid playing school cricket? I presume you were both, you know, mega stars as kids.
We both grew up in Perth, and so we both played for the local club called Wanneroo, which is fantastic for us. They're very supportive. And at school, our school that we both went to probably wasn't really a sporting school, nor an academic school for that matter, but it wasn't really sporting. For example, we got bowled out for 7 in one of our cricket games, and that had Mike and I in the team. So
right.
We weren't the best. We weren't the best kids growing up, but lucky enough when we grew a little bit and we improved our skills, things started to take some shape.
And sorry, I just want to touch on that. You played in the game where you and Mike Hussey, I don't know what to say his last name, just to clarify that, you know, you're related. but you guys played in the game when you were bowled out for 7. But you continued to play cricket after that because you thought, yeah, this is a good game. I'm having fun.
I can be good.
We both love playing it, especially in the backyard. And we happened to come up, our school was doing remarkably well in this tournament. We happened to come up against the cricketing school, and the confidence was high amongst the group, and the whole school came down at lunchtime, and unfortunately we got rock and roll for 7, and everyone finished their lunch and went back to school, and the other team got the runs within, I think it was about 2 overs, and sadly though we had to bowl the extra 30 overs to the opposition just to make up the time, so it was rather disappointing.
Is that the moment that you moved to Victoria after that?
No, I had to graduate school first, sadly.
Oh, that's good. I'm just wondering, we need to find the bloke who took all those wickets in that match. That is a story to dine out on. Yeah, I bombed them, Mike and David.
I'm using Canning Vale lockup at the moment, so yeah.
Okay. You guys saw to it that never happened again, obviously. Yeah, yeah.
Well, he's a player promise. Yeah. You know, that can happen to the best players, the promise.
I mean, the captain won the toss and batter that day as well, so that was his fault. Well,
you'll note that we kind of jump back and forth in the interviews, Dave. Let's fast forward to like recently. I'm just, you know, curious about KP and playing with KP. Would you be able to just, you know, provide some kind of insight into what it's like to deal with the enigma that is Kevin Peterson?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. KP comes with a bit of swagger, a bit of confidence, and he's probably earned the right to have that swagger as well. He's probably the top 50 batsman of all time in our great game. So, I must admit, when he first signed, I was a little bit hesitant, but since the moment he arrived at the Melbourne Stars, he produces on the field, but a lot of people don't actually understand what he does off the field for our boys. He helps the younger boys out, speaks to them a lot about their batting and where they want to go to in their cricket, and devises a pathway for them to actually achieve their dreams. So for that aspect, at the Melbourne Stars, he performs on and off the field. I can't speak highly enough of the guy.
I mean, when you say he performed, he does good things for the young guys off the field, I presume you're talking about things on the circuit. So he's helping the young guys through the circuit, nightclubbing, getting them into bars and stuff, talking to women. That sort of, is that what you're talking
what you
about?
Mean.
Is that what you mean? Is that what you mean?
Well, I'm 39, so I don't really hang around with the youngsters anymore. But if I was, I would definitely be hanging around KP.
Do you notice, I mean, as a senior statesman within the BBL, do you notice any differences in sort of circuiting philosophies or ethics, you know, between young players today and maybe back in your heyday?
Well, back in my heyday, there was no smartphone, so therefore you actually had a conversation with the guy over a glass of wine or a beer.
Oh, interesting. Sort of interesting.
But nowadays, it's
novel.
You get a text from a guy sitting across the table from you saying, do you want a beer, mate, sort of thing, rather than face-to-face communication. So that's probably the biggest difference.
Also less of an electronic trail when things do go awry on the circuit as well.
Everyone wants a battery charger, don't they?
Everyone. That's true, yeah.
Look, let's jump back again, Dave.
Sorry to take you on a strange structural
narrative, but, you know, you were one of the great domestic players of this millennium in terms of Australian cricket. You know, over a decade of service for Victoria, a Sheffield Shield held high, and an average over 50. a lot of people have talked about how you were unlucky to make the test side, especially since your brother achieved so much late in his career relatively. Do you think there's literally anything else you could have done to make the test side? And when you see some guys in the team now with, perhaps haven't put the performances on the board that you did, what do you think about that?
Yeah, it's a tough one, really. Back in the day, probably 2007, 2008, where I was probably scoring a lot of runs and probably at the top of my game. I'm not saying I probably deserved an opportunity to play international cricket, but I'm probably more saying that I was disappointed with the people they selected at the time. But I still can't really complain about all the people that, or all the things that I've actually achieved in the game. So, I'm very happy and very content with what I actually did to actually try and get a game. And, I can't really complain on anything.
Dave, do you know at all how many people have scored 1,000-run seasons in Sheffield Shield history? Do you know the numbers?
No, there'd be a fair few, I reckon. Jamie Cox would have done it probably 20 times or something. Matthew Elliott would have done it a handful of times. So
yeah, I was trying to...
I'm probably going to say 50 or 60.
Yeah, I was trying to kill some time at work today, so I did. Just popped on the Crick Info and just looked up your stats.
I thought you just literally didn't know and you were just asking.
Yeah. Do you know how to be good at cricket? So you are one of 35 players ever to score 1,000, and it's happened 45 times. So Bevan did it a couple of times. Darren Lehman did it a fair few times. Jamie Cox did it a couple of times. So, I mean, you scored 1,008 runs in one season, in the 07-08 season. I mean, you must have been seen. I don't know what my question is. I'm just telling you your stats. That must feel good.
Yeah, don't stop. Keep going.
I think you're onto something here. He goes, because we're always wanting to ask the people that we get on, like, what it's like to be good at cricket, basically.
Yeah, basically.
So can you answer that, David? What's it like to be good?
The best thing about being good at cricket, you actually get a lot of free stuff, like free cricket gear, free stuff.
Oh, can I have some gloves?
Yeah.
Funnily enough, I've given all my cricket gear to the Paran boys, so I don't think Ray Nichols are going to be too happy with them.
Stitch up.
Well, speaking of Paran, sometimes we do a little bit of anonymous research, Dave, from different people who know the interview subjects, and I do have an anonymous question that's come in. If that's all right, it just the question, and so I can't say who it's from, obviously. But the question is, what's happened to you? So this isn't me, by the way, but he says it's a he. What's happened to your rig since you've stopped playing first class cricket? Have you swallowed some balloons?
That's me.
Not a balloon, literally, but a
soccer ball. I promise you that's not me.
Yeah, that doesn't bother me. Well, I'm almost 40 now, so even to like grow old and fat, aren't you? Mm-hmm. So. I would go to the gym to have a coffee and a panini rather than actually lifting any weights or doing any fitness. Yeah. So I might have to revisit that once I hit 40 and have a midlife crisis. So, but no, I'm very happy, very content.
I mean, on your behalf, I'm not happy with that question. I mean, that's probably from like a 21-year-old kid with a wonderful metabolism and skin folds of 6.
When you're 20 or 21, you can just look at weights, and then you just gain muscle mass as well. That's how it works.
Yeah, you have as much food as you want, you wake up skinny. It's the best thing ever.
Mm. David, I was watching an interview of you today back in 2012,
where do you work, mate?
Yeah,
what's your job?
And you were saying there that you had been dropped from the Australian side 14 times. Have you kept track of how many times after that in your career that you've been dropped from the Australian side?
Yeah, I think it's about 19 now, running tally.
About 19, roughly. Yeah. I was going to ask you, I mean, given that you're such a prodigious run scorer and you've scored runs so often, it must be a strange sort of feeling to not be like the best player. I mean, you would have grown up throughout the years being the very best player. You come to state cricket, you're smashing it, you're doing really well. Then you get to the Australian side, then you're sort of in and out. It must be quite a hard thing to have dealt with in your career, if I could be earnest for slightly 2 seconds.
I got used to it by the end, I must say. But initially, yeah, it was quite difficult to handle. And you go home and you kick hands and your bottom lip pops on the ground. But at the end of the day, it's probably the hardest job for the selector that can do is actually tell you that you're missing out, sort of thing. But it never gets easy.
Mm. Like, how do they do that, by the way, when they say, oh, you've missed out? Like, is it a text? Is it an in-person thing? Because we talk a lot about how people get calls up. Usually, they've missed a call by Trevor Holmes and it's gone to voicemail. But when you're getting dropped from the Australian side...
DM on Twitter.
The epitome of what you dreamed of as a child, how do you kind of get that information?
It was more face-to-face with me. This league is always very good upfront with me. I generally could handle the bullet into the head sort of thing. So I was generally okay. So, yeah, generally all face-to-face and pretty much above board.
So in 2012, you were dropped in the World Cup in India for Steve Smith. I mean, does it frustrate you that Steve Smith never took his chance and made himself anything?
Well, funnily enough, actually, I got dropped for my brother. My brother came, he was injured at the time and replaced Doug Bollinger halfway through the year. And it was pretty much Steve and I vying for the same position the whole way through the tournament once Mike was fit and got to the quarterfinals against India. Mm. And neither of us knew who was going to play. And Andrew Hilditch at the time walked over. We were sitting next to each other in the dressing room about 10 minutes before warm-up starts. And he walked over, pointed to Steve and said, you're not playing today, you are. And that was it. So I played the quarterfinals. Yeah, it wasn't probably wasn't the best time, and when Steve probably wished me all the best, he probably didn't mean it. But we're still pretty close now, which is nice. That's cricket.
Yeah.
Look, I was doing a bit of reading on you today as well, Dave. During your career, you had a mantra which you called Teacup. It was an acronym for thinking clearly under pressure. Mm. You said this helps you keep your composure when you're under the pump in a game situation. I'm just wondering if you apply the teacup principles to your life outside of cricket, or is this purely for cricket-related pressure situations?
No, well, I actually plagiarised that from Sir Clive Woodward. He coached the English rugby team to beat the Wallabies, and I'm thinking of it in the World Cup final in 2003, maybe.
That's right.
I read his book. Was, yeah, unbelievable book and unbelievable grand final. And so I thought I'll try and put this into my cricket play, and then it sort of worked, I guess. I've got a few brain fades at times, but off-field life's been relatively quiet, so I can't really complain. Very happily married with two kids, so yeah.
So you're not saying that you're not considering life coaching as a post-cricket career move?
No way. I've got enough to worry about. Not yet. No way.
Dave, did you ever think about moving to New South Wales to get yourself a bag of green?
No chance. I really enjoy living in Melbourne, and so does my wife. So, and I must admit, New South Wales is probably the one team you actually really get yourself up for. We have really good battles with New South Wales, and most importantly, we have a couple of drinks after the play. It's really good fun.
Dave was touching on this earlier, Dave, around the kind of a new selection policy within Australian cricket, which seems to be kind of creating a pathway for anointed half potential prodigies at the expense often of the hardened shield cricketer who churns out runs. What's that like from your point of view? Do you think it's a policy that Australia should be sticking with, or do you think that there's a couple of guys, not to put words in your mouth, but a couple of people who might unfortunately miss out as a result of this kind of search for the for the champion?
Yeah, it's a tough question to answer. I've got a foot in both camps, and without probably too much of a contradiction, I really understand the way CA and Cricket Australia and the selectors are looking. They're trying to find the next generational player who can play the next 15 years and become like the best test team in the world again. But also I understand from a player's point of view that the idea of Sheffield Shield cricket is to make as many runs as you possibly can in order to achieve your dreams for Australia. So that's what I sort of struggle with a little bit. However, the guys that are picking at the moment are actually performing very well in Sheffield Shield cricket. Like, I know Sam Heasley hasn't played much one-day cricket for Australia, for Queensland, but he has performed really well for Queensland in the first-class arena, and same with Matt Renshaw and all the other young guys that have picked at the same time. So I can sort of understand the direction they're heading.
Dave, I want to ask you about the IPL. I don't think any of our other guests have actually played in the IPL off the top of my head. Oh, no, Brad Hogg's played it. But I want to... Can you put into words what the IPL is like in India? Because it's not really that big in Australia. I mean, it is in some circles, but it hasn't really picked off. I mean, people love the BBL here, obviously, but you've obviously carved out a very successful career in the T20 format, and you've played for a couple of sides over as well. So can you put into words what it's actually like to play in the IPL?
Yeah, it's... It's hard to articulate, but the best way I can possibly explain it is it's like a rock show every time you play. You play in front of pretty much packed houses. You're treated like gods, really. Everywhere you go, everything's done for you. You're very well paid, very well looked after, and it's sort of like playing with the best players in the world in your team, so you generally win. Although I'm probably one of the only players who ever played in seven IPLs only to play in one final, so it's an amazing time. If you ever get an opportunity to go to an IPL game, definitely take it up. And if you ever get an opportunity to play in the IPL, definitely take that up.
Okay, cool. I wasn't sure. Not to trivialise your achievements in the IPL, Dave, but what's the Indian circuit like?
Yeah.
Well, funnily enough, I'm a bit of a homebody, so I don't really leave the hotel very often. But the only time I actually did leave the hotel, I went to a night spot in Bangalore with my girlfriend at the time, my wife now. And I must admit, I probably saw some of the best-looking girls ever, and probably the last time I ever brought my wife back to India. So, it was a really enjoyable time.
I think that about covers it for now. We'll let you go, Huss. But look, a big thank you on behalf of the boys. And congratulations on a glittering career. It's been great to watch, and all the best in the future.
Much appreciated, guys. Thank you.
We great cricketers work hard. Everything has to be hard at all times. Work hard. Circuit hard. Just be hard. Never smart. Always hard.
Okay, boys, it's a wonderful pleasure on our last show to bring on to the show a man who is a real enigma in Australian cricket. He's one of my favourite cricketers. Debuted for his country at a late age. He was a senior statesman. He's been prolific for Victoria, prolific in club cricket as well, and he bowls leg spin. Oh, well, if he's still bowling. I'm not sure, but it is, we'll have to ask. It is my great pleasure to introduce Bryce McGain onto the show. Bryce, welcome to The Great Cricketer. How are you?
I'm really good. Thanks for having me on. I listen to it all the time, so it's nice to get the invite to be on.
Lies.
Lies. Absolute lies. Well, explain everything about us, who we are, yeah, what the account was. It's all right, though. Thank you for coming on. We'll take
Every
anything.
Every one of my club friends said I'm the reason why you have designed the whole show. I'm that state guy that never talks to anyone. But
good.
The whole thing's modelled on you, to a T.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Paran before. We just spoke to your... Paran teammate or former Paran teammate Dave Hussey. It seems to be a club that you guys have really enjoyed. What is your relationship to grade cricket?
Really enjoy it. And it's important to understand, you know, that's where you came from. In Dave Hussey's case, he came across from WA as a good grade cricketer and earned his stripes by performing through weighted runs, and that's how we got into the Victorian team, and we know the rest of the story, and you've spoken to him about it. But the same for me. Like, I really embraced... club cricket and how important it is and how it made me a better player. And at times it was incredibly frustrating. I when I first started, it took me 6 games to get 1 wicket. And I thought, there's no way I'm ever going to be able to play this level. I've got no hope. And it was just a matter of just getting better and more belief in yourself. And, you know, for that, I'm, you know, incredibly grateful that that game and that standard of cricket helped me improve to a level that I could play from the state.
Bryce, can you talk us through your progression through grade cricket? Because we've spoken to a lot of guests in this podcast, and basically, like, for instance, one who sticks in my mind is Brad Hogg, who got picked for WA as a batsman. And then he used to bowl some medium pace in the nets, and then one day someone just said to him, oh, can you just bowl out some leg spin? And then he ended up carving out a wonderful international career. Other guys just basically just turned up to training, and they just tried something, and then they turned out to be really amazing at it. Dirk Nanez didn't realise he could bowl 150 Ks until he was about 26.
Skier, yeah.
He was a skier, and he just tried some cricket, and then he was just really good at it. But your career progression was really different. You had to wait a long time to get your first Victorian cap, and then obviously to get your baggy green as well. Can you tell us through your? I mean, did you start in sort of fourth grade down in Melbourne there, and then work your way up to third grade, and then your first grade debut? Can you talk us through your progression?
Well, I started when Frankston Peninsula came into the competition in '93, and I actually debuted in the first. And it's in hindsight, like, I was way out of my depth. There's no doubt about it. But I played as many games in the 7 years that I was at Frankston in the first as I did the second. So I was sort of just up and down all the time, and didn't really get that settled. I had some good performances in the one, and good in the twos, and, you know, it was a little bit inconsistent. And it was probably when I moved to Paran where I probably started believing in myself and just getting better at the game and trusting myself. I had a stable pony that I trained with a bit, and that was John Moss, who also came down from Sydney to Victoria to fulfil his dream to play first-class cricket. And we just did an extra training together. So that's what helped me improve and really start believing in myself and understanding myself. And that was probably why I was so fluctuating with performances. I didn't understand it was up to me. I was sort of looking at all the other, you know, answers everywhere else. Mm. So that's how it happened. And I do it because I really love the game, and I never really lost sight of that. And so, you know, a lot of before I go out and play is, you know, I think about and sort of visualise a bit of how I want to play that day. But it always starts the same way, and always starts with me playing junior cricket at Mornington and understanding that I'm doing it because I love it. So don't take it too seriously. Don't put too much pressure on. Just do it because you enjoy it with a smile. And that's held me in pretty good stead all the way through.
And Bryce Higgo's just mentioned kind of your intro into grade cricket there. It took a while to make the stateside. All the while through, you were kind of carving out a career as a professional, you know, in an office. Mm. So what was that like? I mean, it's quite different to the usual story of a young Australian cricketer, you know, headhunted as a junior, you know, going through the academy, government money, etc. and kind of getting a Willy Wonka's golden ticket into the Australian Test team. You kind of had to, you know, live a second life, if you will. You know, you were just a guy going to work and then playing grade cricket on the weekend.
Turning up to training in a suit.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, that's how it was. And, you know, had a career with ANZ for 17 years, some in finance, some in funds management, and then in IT later on, and was effectively doing that. But as I said before, I always had this belief that I could do it the next level, I could get better, and I could maybe make that. So I'd do extra things. So I'd be getting up at 5 and going to the gym and trying to get better and stronger, because I figured that might help me. I didn't know if it would or not, but I figured it might be better than the alternative as well. And, you know, I'd study the game pretty closely. So I'd always imagine myself in that situation. If I was watching TV watching cricket on telly, I'd think, well, what would I do if I had to bowl to, you know, whoever was batting at the time? And, you know, what would I do? And I think that helped me when the opportunities came, that I was prepared and had thought, done all my thinking beforehand, and I just put some plans into action. In reality, I didn't really know if it was going to work or not, but I just tried it, and I'm really glad I did.
So there's some pretty good players who were playing for Victoria around the time when you were sort of going through this development process. Names that spring to mind: Shane Warne, he was pretty good.
He's a player.
Colin Miller played some cricket, and then of course Cameron White was buying some leg spin as well. So that you were behind sort of three exceptionally good spin or slow bowlers, weren't you?
Yeah, I was, and I had a little taste of three Shield games, you know, early 2000s and 2001, and then it was back to grade cricket. So it was, and I spent 4 years back at grade cricket, just having to grind out and
Gee, it must have tasted good.
must have tasted good.
The Sheffield Shield cricket to keep going, but
yeah.
Well, it did, and it was pretty unfashionable. Like, I guess, you know, I just kept working when most other guys had given up trying, I suppose. And, you know, I just kept believing in myself. And, if it had ended up that I just played those three Shield games, I still would have been pretty proud of, you know, representing the state. But the opportunity came up when Shane Warne retired. Suddenly, Trey won the Ashes 5-0 in 2007, and he was pretty excited with what happened then, and went, oh, well, I'll stop now.
Yeah.
And that sort of surprised Victorian cricket, and then they had to look for the next spinner. And thankfully, I was sort of hovering around taking wickets at the right time, and it was a perfect storm, because Cameron White then got picked for Australia as a young guy. Trevor Holmes knows that story pretty well. So, I guess that, my opportunity came through that way.
Bryce, we've been talking a little bit about selection policy on the show already. I'm just wondering, given your story of how you came into the Australian setup, whether you think that kind of opportunity might have been available to you today, given the way that they're kind of picking players?
Probably not. No, it was unfashionable. They were desperately looking for a spinner, but not really backing anyone at the time. Look, I was one of, I think there was a dozen spinners that they tried, and then went, oh, well, we'll just move on to the next one, and it doesn't quite work. Sometimes forgetting that the very best, in his first two tests, ended up having, you know, one for 300 plus. And, it wasn't it was something that Shane Warne mentioned to me, that at the end of my first test, he said, well, you know, I did the same thing, and, you know, I luckily just got a wicket, but I went for over 150, so don't worry about it, you'll be right. But I didn't ever get another opportunity, so that sort of ended that theory. But I think when they eventually then trusted someone, and they eventually got to the point, well, okay, we'll trust Nathan Lyon, we think he's got some goods, and in the end, he grew into the role and developed on the team, and, you know, he's now the GOAT. So, I think that they weren't sure what they wanted with their spinner following Shane Warne, whether they wanted to be a run saver, a wicket taker, both. super economical and do all the amazing things he did. So, yeah, I was probably just a, throwing in the mix there a little bit. But to get that opportunity at my age now, I think it'd be highly unlikely. But you never know. Like, guys like Michael Klinger, which is a terrific story, and I don't think anyone's put together a better body of work in terms of runs and all that. But, you know, at whatever, at 37, 36, 37 years now, like, he could, on the Brad Hogg, on the Hogg scale, have 8 years ahead of him. So, who knows? He's incredibly fit, works really hard. So why can't he do it well into his 40s?
Well, I was going to ask you, because I was reading today on foxsports.com.au, a little plug there for the sponsors. I was going to ask you that the Michael Klinger is the oldest player since you, Bryce, to actually debut for Australia, the oldest player in terms of, I think Michael Klinger is a year slightly less than a year older than what you were at the same age. So you must be able to relate to his story in some degree.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think it's terrific because he's just kept working, kept believing, and a lot of people doubted him, and he had to move from state to state, and he still kept believing, and, you know, the support for him is immense, and the respect for him at domestic cricket is enormous. Other players respect him so highly for the way he plays, the way he conducts himself, and the performances he just continually puts out, both here and in England. Like, he knows England conditions inside and out. He is one of the best performing players. We saw it with Chris Rogers. You know, they go over there, it's just a second world. They're very, very comfortable where, you know, it takes a bit to get used to those conditions. And he's got a game that works beautifully over there as it does in Australia.
Bryce, I'm really I'm curious about this sort of senior debuting that you did and what Michael Klinger's doing as well. You're a senior IT professional as well in one of the big four banks. What was the conversation like in the change room for the Australian side full of young 20-year-olds and you're an IT professional?
Yeah.
Well, look, very different. I'm not sure they kind of gathered. I wasn't out of the mould that they were, which was, as you mentioned before, academies and so forth, and destined to play for Australia. I certainly wasn't. I was probably a club cricketer that didn't quit trying. So, you know, for me, it was very different. But I had a lot of different experiences and understood how to deal with people a lot. And I think that helped me feel relatively comfortable in meeting new people who were well-established and, you know, who'd been involved in the system for some time. So from my perspective, I wasn't overawed by it, but I'm certain that some of the players probably went, well, what do we talk to this bloke about? Yeah, it might be a bit tough.
Bryce, can you tell us about your experience around the Australian setup? I mean, you were picked on the Indian tour just before, about a year before you got your gig in South Africa. But can you tell us your experiences of the one test match that you played? Obviously, it didn't go as well as what you would have liked, obviously. But can you tell us about the experiences that you had over the 4 or 5 days that you were playing for Australia?
Look, for me, it was, it's probably a fair bit of the journey to get there. And even though I went for tons of runs off not many overs, you know, I'd always dreamt in the backyard of making 100 for Australia. I didn't know it'd be off 10 overs of my own bowling.
That's good.
It was one of those things that just, you know, it really just unraveled. It seemed like every corner I went to bowl, you know, they'd read the book before, and Jacques Callis and A.B. de Villiers and all the best of all time. Look, it was a challenge bowling to them. You know, every ball I bowled was the best effort I could do, you know, and so, you know, I tried my heart out, but, and look, in the end, even though my bowling figures weren't great, you know, I was still really proud, and I'm certainly not ashamed to have represented Australia, albeit just bowled in one inning.
Did the boys from South Africa, did you have a chat to them after the game? I mean, they obviously, as you said, you know, went after you a bit. Did they have a chat with you?
Oh, look, they did, and in some respect, you know, they were respectful. They were respectful, and Mickey Arthur later on, a few years later, said that, and he said he was impressed with the way I handled myself around that, in that, you know, other people might have been completely overawed and rattled, and I then went back to Shield cricket and still performed well and still, you know, did the best I could and still enjoyed my cricket. I wasn't shattered by it. It didn't rock me to, you know, losing everything and having the yips or anything like that. You know, they were just respectful, and they knew that the journey for this guy to make it, you know, he earned it. You know, it wasn't just a matter of, oh, he just rolled up and, oh, he had a bad day. You know, they were respectful.
Spot on.
Well, Bryce, this point in the interview, we'll move to what we call the throwdown section, where we just kind of ask you a few quick questions, you know, aim a few at your head, and maybe you can get a couple away to find legs.
I'm put on the chest guard as we speak.
Look, I mean, we mentioned before that you were a banking or IT professional at ANZ before becoming a test cricketer. I'm just wondering, which is harder, playing test cricket for Australia or encouraging enterprise customers to integrate banking services into their ERP systems?
Definitely the latter. That's hard work, I can assure you.
Bryce, what should Australians do to keep their anonymity online in the face of Australia's recently passed data retention laws?
Wow. You'll have to go again with that. Let's go to the next question.
Wikipedia. Just turn it on and off, mate.
Bryce, Wikipedia tells me that you played for Denmark. Can you run us through that?
I was over there coaching, and I played a one-day game for them in what was the Cheltenham and Gloucester Cup, which was in England, and we played against Leicestershire, and that was deemed a List A game. It also bumped my batting average up. I got 50 runs. So.
Look, Bryce, one of the things you're doing at the moment is you're doing a bit of broadcast work on the ABC alongside our good friend Paul Kennedy on the sports couch.
PK.
Does PK have the best rig at the ABC?
He's as fit as a trout. I couldn't believe it. I saw him doing some Scottish pole throwing one time on the screen.
What?
He's got cannons that are unbelievable. He's a fit man and, certainly puts me to shame,
Bryce, one of my favourite tricks is to go to all of my friends' work Christmas parties and say that I'm from the IT department because no one ever knows what the IT department looks like. Was this your initial reason for getting a job at the ANZ?
Just to hide away in the shadows and keep working.
Yeah, just get free beers, Christmas.
Yeah. It can definitely work that way. Yeah, there's thousands in the IT department.
Bryce, someone's come in as an anonymous source. We had one for Hussey as well, and it's a Paran club, mate. And so, again, my fingerprints aren't on this, but this is what came through to me. Ask him about playing for Paran at the Junction and your missus turning up in black leather jeans and white top, and the boy started singing "You're the One That I Want," ooh, ooh, from Greece. So consider that asked.
That did happen, and, it was quite entertaining. Just went to support the guys. We flew back in from a Shield game, I think, and went to support them, and... they stirred me up nicely. So, that did happen.
So if you're the Danny Zuko, who's the Vince Fontaine of the Paran Cricket Club?
I think that was Chris Rogers out there that day,
How did you justify having your first season as an overseas player in England at age 36?
that was a bit different for them, but... Look, it was a couple of games that I played with Essex, and they were really welcoming. They were good. They got a great sting culture as well, so they kept throwing me the ball. I love that.
Did they include accommodation and free beers at the clubhouse in that deal?
Yeah, did you get flights and accommodation? What was the...
Dollar a run?
Pound
a run?
Pound a run.
I had to whip a step around the ground every once a month, so, I had to do all the ground keeping. Yeah.
Coach the kids. Well, Bryce, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. We really appreciate you enduring that. You're obviously a very good sport. Congratulations on your career as well, and thanks for joining the last show of The Great Cricketer this summer.
Well, look forward to tuning in next year. Thanks, guys.
No Cheers, worries. Mate.
Thanks, Bryce.
All right, well, that was Bryce McGain. We're into the final segment of the podcast for the summer.
The final segment, the final episode ever.
Why am I crying?
Again. What are these feelings? It's called Ask TGC. You have written in your questions.
Yeah.
There's a few. Let's try and get through as many as we can. It's been a long show, but, you know.
Anthony Grinham writes in and says, should Marcus Stoinis retire from all forms of cricket after that performance over in New Zealand, taking 3 poles and 150-odd in a losing side? Anthony raises a very good question.
Yes, I think the answer is yes.
It can't get any better.
It won't get any better. I know. All right, Kieran Burge, he writes in, gents, where I play club cricket in Surrey, the woo-off has become the go-to celebration of the fast bowler. This involves him giddily wooing during his victory trot to the slip cordon. The goal here is doubtless to rubber stamp the alfering he's just dished out to his victim, but surely the often highly pitched noise itself carries mainly beta qualities. Has this phenomenon made its way to Sydney? If so, what are your views on it? Ask TGC.
Wonderful question.
What's the woo-off? What do we call a woo-off here?
Well, I don't think I've ever heard the phrase, but I presume it's just, you know, go, woo.
Well,
like, you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I played 3 seasons in Surrey. That was where my club was.
Right.
And I never came across this.
The woo off.
But I've seen it a lot in grade cricket.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. When do you reckon it first came about? What year? I want to know what year you first heard, like, the you.
Yeah. I think chorus you of is, ewing. You is new.
I blamed it on surfing culture. Mm. I blamed it.
Yeah, as if
it
was, that's right. Something I blame surfing.
Kelly Slater.
Marco Colupo.
Yeah. 2000, they won the world championship.
I don't know if it's beta, but it is doubtless, as he says, to rubber stamp the outfring they've just dished out.
Yeah,
isn't
it's,
it?
Nothing, it's a well phrased question.
Nothing punctuates a send-off quite like a U.
But do you find that when people you know, Y-I-E-W, right?
Yeah.
You've got to spell it, sorry.
Yeah. Only way to spell it.
Like, yeah. It's almost like being back in a classroom as a kid when someone had to just make the last noise. Like, there's always someone who's just at the end just going,
yeah.
Like an assembly, like you have to be the last clap.
Or last to sit down,
Last to sit down.
Okay. Angus McKelvey, Hill writes in, it's a little bit long. Hey, TGC, I have quite a dilemma to solve. I'm a junior at my club and tend to fill in for the lower grades most weekends. On this particular occasion, I was playing a lower grade when very early on in my innings, I took a nasty blow to the box. I took a moment before taking guard again, only to hear the obese first slip to snigger, "Hey, mate, want me to rub it?" before an overzealous laugh. Yuck. I ignored him and continued to bat, but the comments kept coming, periodically more morbidly sexual in nature, and continued until my eventual dismissal. Now knowing I never want to experience that again, should I now just retire hurt every time I get hit there? Should I just cop it? Or is there possibly some rebuttal to such comments? Please help me, as I use cricket solely as a way to avoid awkward social interaction, and I don't want to have them while playing the game.
Great question.
Vulnerable and good.
Great question.
Yeah.
My God, this is horrifying.
I think you'd want to challenge the guy next time he says, "Hey, mate, want me to rub it?" Okay.
Well, there's the risk that if you do that, then he might double down and go, okay, and start rubbing it. Yeah. Because in cricket, everyone needs to double down on their actions and their words. So that's a risk.
Also, he's desperate for interaction of any sort.
Yeah.
I presume if he's obese, he hasn't been loved by anyone for a long period of time, let alone himself. So he actually may engage in that interaction. So I'd be scared of that.
Then the police would be involved. It would be a whole thing.
It's a whole thing as a crime scene. Like, because, I mean, as you've said in the past, Dave, you know, there's police tape around our ground, our home ground, instead of...
cones.
Get a set of cones because we're all fucking dead inside.
Mm. It's, like, we're living in an increasingly progressive society as well, though. Clearly, the humour behind "Hey, mate, want me to rub it?" is that, like, because clearly I'm not. But I just think in today's society, you could probably feasibly go, "Oh, that'd be great."
Yeah, I think 2017, there's nothing wrong with rubbing another man's box.
I appreciate that. Yeah. That'd be good.
Russ Dunning, should I say. Actually, let's skip this one. It looks silly. Let's go straight to Tomo Newton. let's go back to Russ. I didn't do injustice. A good topic for one of your posts, thanks for the advice, mate, might be that fuckwit in lower grades that takes centre left-handed and then faces up right. I was always one and I was always out for under 10. Cheers, keep up the good work.
Yeah. So, well, he doesn't play great cricket, so that doesn't happen in great cricket. Next, Tomo Newton. Sorry,
Alfred Russ.
Alfred, really, no. Every turn.
Yeah. Just don't say lower grade, you don't play great.
Alfred
Tomo Newton. Hi, TGC. Me and my friend are first-year sport journalism students and cricket players at university and are planning on running for positions on the committee next year. Most of the committee are third years and will be leaving next year. However, the current president won't be. Did we talk about this last week, Hugo?
It's similar, but it's not the same question.
We're looking for a president/vice president partnership. How do you recommend overthrowing the current president? By going through the official channels of voting or by organising a military-style coup like we've seen in Turkey? If the second option, how would you guys recommend going about the coup? Cheers, guys. We have to discredit the media.
My first... alternative facts, hashtag. Yeah. My first point is Tomo Newton says, hi... Me and my friend are first-year sports journalism students. Me and my friend, journalism. My friend and I.
So smug.
Sorry, Tomo. Yeah. Keep liking the posts, though. Yeah. I like military-style coup because it's undermining, it's undercutting, and it's undervalued, in my opinion.
And you'll earn the subtle respect of those around you if you're prepared to go about life that way, because that is great cricket, after all, subtle undercutting.
Stabbing people in the back, smiling to their faces.
Yep.
Yeah, laugh at their jokes if they're on a high grade.
The way Trump won his way democratically to the presidency was by pandering hard to a disengaged base. So that's obviously what you need to do, take hardline positions on things like overseas players, you know, to mirror the kind of immigration debate that's going on in the States. That could be an option.
Yep.
Issues-based politics is what I'm saying, and always will.
create an alternative Facebook page for the club as well and just call the actual club, the actual page fake news.
Also, he says, I think in the question,
that's good.
He says, most of the committee will be leaving, but the current president won't be. So you just need one of them to get in and then kind of subvert from within. They don't need to run on a
House
ticket. They want to go on a Trump-Pence ticket.
Yeah.
You can't do that. Just get one person in and then work
your way. That's interesting. Mm.
This one comes from Kunalaura1797. Next time, just give us your name.
It's on Twitter.
The name was actually K, literally one letter.
Yeah, K. All right, yeah. That's how I reply to every text. Great cricketer. I'm impeccable at giving throwdowns to anyone at training, but when it's time for me to have a bat, I'm left with the shit bloke who can't throw straight and more than 60 Ks. Please help. And like many of our listeners, I'm in a crisis yet.
I don't know.
Pick a better, get better friends. Stop playing cricket.
Yeah, just always
have some vision. You know that you're going to get paired with a bloke who can't bowl or can't throw.
I don't know. I mean, if he's the last to get throwdowns, he's probably an ordinary bat.
Secure your throwdowns early.
Yeah. I would suggest, now this might be a case where he could wear a suit to training just to assert some sort of authority, put himself in a position of power just by visually. I mean, it's a Shaun Marsh effect. Always look good. Always looking good to get yourself selected.
Take your throwdowns or give you throwdowns in a suit is what you're saying.
I'm not saying in a suit, but turning up to training in a suit. Well, this guy means business. He may have money. He may buy me a beer if I give him throwdowns. If I give him good throwdowns, he might buy me a beer. Obviously, he won't because he's a cricketer, so he has no money.
You just see a person in a suit and you go to, go to CBD and you just think, wow, there's so many blokes in suits here with jobs.
It's daunting.
Matthew Bouch.
This one we can go through quickly.
Given his recent coaching success and ability to churn out runs worldwide, should Justin Langer take the reins immediately?
Ernest, cricket questions. Probably.
No,
I don't know. Lehman's got a contract for 5 years, so get used to it.
I think Matthew's asking the wrong forum.
Yeah.
If he wants serious stuff.
And the last one, Simon Redfern, at Loose Redfern. At grade cricketer, people being champed in 1980s move, which I think he means movie, better off dead. I thought you guys invented the champ.
Invented?
Yeah.
I think we re-established it in the common lexicon. I don't think we invented the word champ. I don't think we invented the word champ.
We appropriated it.
We appropriated it.
I think we called it out for what it was, though. I mean, I don't think we should lay claim to, you know, making it clear that champing is very condescending.
It's gone global as well, because I was actually watching season 6 of Suits on my flight back from Singapore
last week. Based on a true story, yeah.
And there was a guy got champed in prison.
Yeah.
The main character got champed in prison.
So it's made to the States is what you're saying.
Well, yeah, it's made it to the States and it's on Suits.
And was it like a deliberate condescending champ?
Yeah. His roommate champed him. You know, they were having a disagreement of some sorts and he got champed.
Do you know what's funny though? Like, because I've never really been champed before. Like, I've just never come across, like, I've obviously...
You have, though, you just don't even know it.
Well, but it happened to me this week. I was at the gym the other day and the personal trainer said, he said something champ, and he called me champ, and it was jarring.
It still
has a jarring effect.
I got champed hard at work 2 years ago, working in a corporate, and this executive who I did some work for didn't like. He actually was his comms guy,
right?
And he walked up on our floor, and he walked past me and my partition, from his office,
right?
And he saw me, and he went, "G'day, champ!" And one of my colleagues who follows the account absolutely lost it. Like, this guy didn't know my
Ernest
name.
Champ.
But he was condescending. It was very kind. That it was just a straight, without irony, "G'day, champ." Yeah.
And did he pop the P?
Oh, everything you want.
I'll tell you who's big on the champ on Twitter. Adam Gilchrist champs every single person.
Yeah.
He champs everyone. But he's such a nice guy.
So you reckon for all these years, he's just been champing blokes and meaning it?
Yeah, meaning it.
Well, see, I think in the early 2000s or even late 90s, it was a little bit more endearing to say, "Oh, hey, champ." But it's just kind of died and become this evil, condescending term. And I think Gilchrist is stuck in the late 90s, and that's where I want him to stay.
Well, I'm surprised he's not chiefing blokes instead of champing. He's stuck in the 90s.
We've come to that time of the week, I think, and that time of the summer. Sam, what's the butt in?
There's a couple of people have left us some messages.
Apologies.
There's
still time. We've got nothing but time.
And I hope that they sort of reflect the views of everyone listening out there to the show this season, but I thought let's just play these farewell messages and we'll come back.
Mm-hmm.
Here they are.
Hi guys, just wanted to say thanks very much for the podcast over the last few weeks. We've really enjoyed them over here in London. And if any of you want to sleep with my girlfriend, you're more than welcome. Apart from the bald bloke, he's a bit creepy.
Hi, The Great Cricketer. My boyfriend demands we have sex every week when you bring out a new podcast. He says we can only have sex when the podcast is playing in the background. Can you please make a new series ASAP, as his libido has dropped significantly since he heard that you were finishing? Thanks so much.
Hello, everyone there at The Great Cricketer Podcast. It is me. Yes, it's me, the great man, KP. I'm just calling in to say well done on a great first season. It's a bit like my first season at the Stars, outstanding, which has also been like my second season, my third season, my fourth season, and my fifth season. Simply outstanding stuff, guys. Just really pumped. Hopefully next year I'll be able to get on the show, obviously boost the ratings, but just calling in, as I said, to say farewell. I'm off now, and as you are, and how's it? And hopefully see you guys soon. Okay, bye.
Lads, we've done it. Many, many episodes. About a month ago, we went past 100,000 downloads on some charts or something. At one stage...
Or something.
Yeah. Have you seen my new tattoo? Yeah. At one point, the number one sports podcast in Australia before everyone started to make content again. And now we're, you know, top 1,000. Yeah. But I suppose we must thank the listeners for tuning in each week. It's been a wonderful experience for us, three blokes from the internet, to present these shows to you, to speak to some cricketers who played higher than state level and beyond, because we never did that in their own career. So it's been quite a platform to have this.
And we should add that all those guests came on as unpaid guests. Mm-hmm. That's probably a testament to us not being able to afford that, but also a testament to their good grace to give us their time and also take a little bit of the humour that we've dished out to them, and it's been good fun.
And lastly, a big thanks to Fox Sports for making this a thing. Otherwise, we would have just been doing it over Skype with very poor audio and would have lost interest immediately. We sledged the dank room, but actually it's pretty good because we've been able to do this.
Do you guys have a favourite moment over the summer?
Gideon Hayes' story about his daughter offering him. It's probably my favourite. Mm.
Dave? You?
Oh, mate, just the whole thing.
Just the whole thing. I don't think I'll ever forget Brendan Julian's leg spread and arms above his head, just offering each and every one of us and walking in and saying, so what is this?
Yeah, that's right.
That was a highlight.
Maybe we've lifted the Sheffield Shield before.
Yeah, and then it's heavy.
Yeah.
I found out that Sheffield Shield was heavy. Bobby Kiney, when he was talking about how he just goes now for the showers, that was enlightening for me.
When he's not even playing.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess we did speak about some current topics over the summer, but in many ways, we hope that this has been timeless in some manner. So perhaps if you want to go over it again, fill your boots. Mm. I'll still be counting every single download, every single play. Boys, what's next? I don't know what's next.
Yeah.
India's around the corner. But lots of people wanted to keep doing the podcast and talk about that, but I don't have it in me.
Maybe you can crowdfund us. Set up a crowdfunding page, put $50,000 in it, we might.
Maybe we could do some more bad Facebook Live videos.
Yeah.
Who knows what's around the corner? I suppose if you want to follow us on our own personal Twitters to catch up with each and every one of us, you know how the internet works. You have permission to do that, to follow us on the internet.
Yeah.
The Great Cricketer, who knows what's next? Thanks for tuning in.
All right.